From unknown parts of metropolitan New York City, I am the hip and this is the
Yes, yes. Hello, everybody out there in Hip and Lip Nation. Good evening or good morning, good afternoon, whenever you might be listening. Yes, we are a hipster and the lip, or hip and the lip for sure, New York sports podcast. And if you're watching us on the YouTubes, don't touch that dial. That's right. You can only see me. You cannot see the hip, but you can hear both of us. And that's why you're tuning in, is it not? Well, hopefully it is, and you're going to stay with us as we have so much to do. A jam-packed show as the baseball comes down the stretch. The football is just around the corner. W guess for the Jets and for the Giants. All expectations through the roof and raining down on all of us, as we will do later in the program. And the golf, who cares? The PGA Masters 2018 previews coming out. I can't believe that. But anyway, what say you, Mr. Hip?
Well, what everybody cares about is the NFL, because the Hall of Fame game, which was the first preseason game, had an overnight rating of 5.4. What do you think the overnight rating for the Game 6 clincher of the 2017 Stanley Cup Final had? If the overnight rating for the Hall of Fame game was 5.4?
I don't know. Did the NHL crack 5? I'll say 4. I'll say
nope.
4. 4.8.
4.8 is exactly correct.
Actually, I did not know that. I did guess, but I figured that did not crack a 5.
So there you have it. Yes, folks. People like the NFL.
I watched about 6 seconds of that Hall of Fame. Maybe seven seconds. Maybe it was on.
Look, we're going to get to Ezekiel Elliott. We're going to get to Colin Kaepernick, because that's what all the folks are debating about these days. But I'm sure the Lip will find something to rant about that's a little astray from what you may have heard ad nauseum. So look.
Calm, cool, collected, Mr. Lip.
Teams are in the middle of hosting the Mets. And they will go back to host. They'll go back to Fenway Park for a set of three, and a critical stretch for them. What'd they call it? Rivalry week or something?
Yes, rivalry week. 10 games with the Yankees. With the Mets and the Red Sox. I mean, I'll let you continue in there. It's amazing to me that the Yankees have come to a point that their cachet has dropped to a point where they actually have to label a week and a half's worth of games. I mean, why rivalry week? Why not? Hey, we're actually relevant in August when not even we thought we would be weak. Or about 6 games that really matter, sandwiched around 4 games that are not nearly as impactful in the standings week. But now I guess,
yeah, it's weird. Rivalry week would be something that would be an earlier in the season, where the game, where the games may not seem as critical up front. Whereas here, I don't know. It's the middle of August, and the Yankees have the first spot in the playoff, in the wild card. Yeah,
so they're in the playoff, so, pennant race, whatever. Rivalry week, really? You have to get people to tune in. You have to try and market this to people to tune in by calling it rivalry week. I mean, they're in the middle of a pennant race. That should be enough.
Well, the injuries are striking the Yankees starting rotation.
It's the Yankees,
they acquired Sonny Gray, Jaime Garcia, but now Tanaka is down. CeCe's down again. So Luis Sessa got the start tonight for the Yankees. Then Montgomery got recalled back to rejoin the rotation. So look, they're far from perfect, and you got Judge struggling. So we'll get to all that good stuff. We'll mention the Jets, and hipster moment is the end. So look, is it the home run derby that is at fault for Aaron Judge's struggles?
Well, we have to find something, right? We have to find something to blame on the fact that Aaron Judge has been just abysmal since the All-Star break. Did hit a home run tonight. So what is that, like 35 or something like that?
36.
36, okay. So, he's going to end up. I mean, just the fact that he has 36 home runs, he can go the rest of the season without hitting a home run, and you can look back on it and say, wow, 36 home runs. That's amazing.
I mean, look, he's still first in the American League in home runs and walks and slugging percentage. So even despite this horrid stretch, he was just so otherworldly in the American League that, even with this slide, it's how much does he bounce back? But put this in perspective, though, Giancarlo Stanton now has, do you know how many home runs?
He's been on a tear, I know. And he was also, well, I guess we talked about it the last episode, how he only made it one round in the home run derby. So maybe that's why he's been on a tear.
Do you know how many home runs he has?
To answer your question, I know he has over 40. I'll guess 42.
43, because he's homered in 10 of the last 11 games, or 10 home runs in the last 11 games.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Like, that's beyond anything Judge has even done this year.
Yeah.
So Stanton has, you know, look, we've seen Stanton do this before. He's just, you know, when he's on, he hits the balls. He and Judge are like the two, you know, it's like the AL and NL. These are the two hardest hitters in the league. That's all there is to it.
I mean,
so they're both fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, they connect and the ball goes a mile. See, now, Judge, the one thing, and you mentioned walks, that's the one thing that's encouraging throughout this very bad stretch that he's had over the last month. He's still walking. He's still drawing walks. Now, he definitely has lost confidence at the plate because you've seen him strike out looking now a number of times. You'd rather almost see him strike out swinging where he's maybe missing a fastball, and you say, all right, he'll just kind of get his timing back. Because that's what, you know, you hear Girardi, oh, it's mechanical. You know, I think he's also missing pitches that he crushed.
Totally.
Pitches that are hittable that he's just missing.
Very hittable pitches that he's missing.
Getting under, whatever. So, I mean, it's encouraging that he's walking. I don't think there's any reason to think that he's not going to pick it up some down the stretch. You know, could be wrong. I mean, maybe he hits 160-something the rest of the season. I think he's gonna pick it up just because he is still walking and he's still gonna get if he maintains his patience, he will get pitches in the zone that he can handle. And once he gets his timing back, fixes whatever mechanical issue there may be, according to the manager, I think he'll start connecting again. But he's gonna be vital down the stretch because right now there's no Holiday. Who the hell knows if he's coming, when or if he's coming back. Castro's, and he's been a big loss, Holiday. Because remember how good Holiday was in the first half. We all talked about Judge and Castro and some of the other guys, Hicks. But how about Holiday? I mean, just the fact that, I mean, he's been non-existent now really since June. And, you know, again, who knows if he's coming back. Hicks has actually picked up right where he left off since he's come back with a couple
Hicks
of
is, huge Hicks has been super solid. Yeah, a couple God, of huge home runs, plays in the field. Yep. Yep.
I mean, incredible. Friday night, the home run. He had a home run, the game-winning home run tonight. Obviously made the play on Friday after the home run, throwing out Nooney at third base against the Red Sox. But, yep. You know, Castro, you know, eventually will be back, hopefully sooner rather than later. So he'll be a welcome addition to that lineup. But we know that lineup, it seemed like it went in. It was driven by what Judge was doing in the middle of it. I'm not going to say that they should make, you know, shift around guys or drop Judge or do this or do that. We've seen Girardi do a few little minor tinkers and adjustments. But I mean, the Yankees, bottom line is they're four back in a loss column to Boston. They have the three with the Mets. They have three with the Red Sox this weekend. We'll see where they are on Monday when the dust settles. They have three with the Red Sox. Was it Labor Day or that is the weekend before? I think it's Labor Day weekend. That weekend they have three with the Red Sox. So, and then that's it. Then they're done. And then it's a lot of games against Toronto and Baltimore and Tampa and all the other division foes that are not the Red Sox. So still in they still have the first wild card space. There's nine teams in the American League that are within six games, I think, of the loss column of the Yankees. So everybody's alive in the American League, including the Angels. You're talking about Stanton. How about Mike Trout leading those Angels? My God. So everybody alive in the American League for the wild card. So coming down the stretch, rivalry week or whatever, after that's over, just a lot of
– How many starting pitchers for the Angels can you name right now?
Well, I can name in the rotation. One. Just because I have him on my fantasy team. Was it that Parker guy, right?
Oh yeah,
exactly.
I mean, that team being in the race at this point, it just more speaks to the mediocrity of the league. I think more than are we really giving credit to the Angels here? Do they deserve any credit?
I think we do because they. I mean, they were bad, and we said that they would be bad. They were bad for most of the year. All of a sudden now, you know, they Trout's come back, and they played really well. It's unbelievable. Parker Bridwell. So I think you do have to give them credit. I mean, yes, the American League is extremely mediocre. You know, you have the Astros and everybody else. But
is the Yankees starting rotation going to hang on? Severino got, you know, Benintendi just – you know, basically destroyed him on Saturday.
I'm not worried about Severino yet.
It's Boston, and he's allowed to start like that from time to time. But, you know, in like the last 4 weeks, we've seen the Yankee starters barely eclipse five innings in half the games. And I know we talked about how awesome their bullpen is, but I'm sorry. We'll get to that. But if you're only pitching, you know, if you're only getting through five innings for half the starts, that's also
a product of the manager, who's been very quick to yank his starting pitchers because he has his book. And if you read Phil Mushnick, he rants about this all the time in the New York Post. But I mean, Girardi has been just so quick to yank starting pitchers. I mean, he has got to stop with this. Okay, you know, I know how deep their bullpen is, and I understand it's very tempting just to say, all right, you gave me five good innings. I got like five guys in the bullpen that I actually feel like I can rely on, that I think are good and I can trust. So it's easy just to say I'll yank my starting pitcher, but you got to let the game circumstance dictate it. If your starting pitcher is going well, let them pitch. And you want to say, well, how many pitchers actually can go deep into games and have the ability to do that? I mean, other than Severino, I mean, Montgomery, Montgomery, he got yanked, what was it, against Cleveland a few weeks ago before he was sent to the minors. He had 60-something pitches in five innings. He yanked them. I mean, we saw it at Boston the other night. I mean, I didn't kill him the other night. It was probably the right time to at least consider to pull him. He probably didn't have to, but I'm not going to kill him for that. And the bullpen did a good job before the closer, and we'll get to him. But that is also, I think, a product of Girardi's managing, and he's got to stop with this compartmentalizing of the bullpen. You have this inning, you have that inning. Oh, the starting pitcher goes this many, and then I have to go to this guy, and then this guy, and yank him. Even if he throws eight pitches, it goes 1, 2, 3, yank him, and put in this guy. You got to let the game circumstance dictate and have a better feel for it, and not just look at your stupid book.
I was impressed that Girardi kept in Chapman, just transitioning here.
What, Sunday? Yesterday?
On Friday. No, on Friday, where he first seven.
Now, you mean yanking, not yanking him after. Well, the three straight walks and then. There was no way that Girardi was going to yank Chapman at that point. Even after the three straight walks, it was going to be his game to lose. I don't think there was anybody warming up at that point anyway.
No, there wasn't. So, he gets out of that. Diniak gets some help from Hicks making the throw on the one out on the fly ball. And then, last night, a little different story with the rookie. Devers goes to Oppo. First home run Chapman allowed this year. In general,
yeah,
it was to a lefty.
Yeah,
it was opposite field on a 103-mile-an-hour fastball. Just, I guess, you know, they're sitting on his fastball, knowing, you know, if he can't locate a slider,
he can't locate anything. His command has been terrible, and that's the thing with. I mean, right now, honestly, and I usually don't say this about established closers who have a track record. Usually, and he's blown four saves this year. You watch him, but his body of work, it's not very good this year. The four blown saves, all right, that's not terrible, but his overall body work has not been very good. Right now, there's no intimidation factor with the batters anymore. You know, they're used to his 102-mile-an-hour fastball. I mean, it's not like he's blowing anybody away. They're fouling it off, and then when they can connect on one that they get in the zone, they're hitting it. And you know, he's wild. He has no command of his pitches, but. I usually subscribe to the philosophy that an established closer, you let him figure it out. You know what? Not this time. And Chapman, again, has been at times this year really bad. Again, Friday, he was abysmal. Yesterday, again, didn't get the job done. I don't care. It was a good piece of hitting by Devers, whatever. The Yankees have a couple of guys that can assume that role. So if you have to yank Chapman from that closer's role, he didn't do it. He didn't pitch tonight, you know. Pitched two innings yesterday, whatever. But if you have to yank him from that role, then do it. And that's the bottom line. You know, the Robertson can do it. We know he can do it. You know, Betances, you want to try Conley, whoever. You know, I would say give Robertson and Betances the first couple cracks at it if Chapman's going to continue to pitch like this and say, hey, Chapman, you're going to pitch when we tell you to pitch. I don't want to hear this nonsense about, oh, you're a closer. I can only come in these situations. You're a damn pitcher. Pitch when we tell you. And that's it.
I think he'll get the next save chance, Chapman. And if he's still iffy, then I think you'll see Betances. I mean, Betances got the save tonight because Chapman had pitched a lot in the last couple days, but they do have a lot of options, in fairness. I get it. All right.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to figure that out, though, because they cannot have Chapman go out there and walk the ballpark and then hope for a perfect throw and tag by Hicks.
I have to say, you know what? It feels like this is it does feel like a fun team to watch. I grew up a Yankees fan. I'm like the weirdest and most disloyal fan that you'll ever find. I grew up a Yankees fan, got bored because they kept winning, and then became a Mets fan, and they're terrible now. Here's my deal. I am admittedly going to be at least putting on the Yankees game every night to follow this race, because it's just a different team now. There's, you know, and there's a lot of young players, and
are you rooting for them? That's the question. Are you putting them on and rooting for them to win?
I will. I don't know. It's one of those things where I won't know until I'm actually watching to see how I feel.
Day by day basis. Well, today I'll root for them. Tomorrow I'll just be indifferent.
No, it's not a conscious decision. It's kind of how I react based on what's happening. If I know, if I get excited, if they do well or not. So
like if they're down, we'll they're nothing see. In the eighth inning to the Red Sox, and then they mount a comeback and score five in the bottom. And then I'll get excited. Kinda, yeah.
Well, look, they're a young team, and there's a lot of intrigue on what the future holds going forward. So,
I agree.
Why not?
Hey, you're in New York. The Mets are playing out the string. They've traded all their guys now, it seems like, with the exception of Granderson who hit a home run tonight. And I'm actually surprised that I don't know if teams have inquired about Granderson to add to their roster going down the stretch. But, you know, Walker's gone and Duda's gone and Bruce is gone. Everybody was up in arms over the trade of Bruce. And it's funny. I was going to say that obviously with the Mets and Yankees playing and whether or not you're still into that, you think it's exciting. It's not, you know, it's just, you know, it's another game, not very intriguing or, you know, other than the fact that the Yankees are in a playoff race. But I was going to say that the only intensity right now between those two teams is the pissing match going on between, you know, their ownership of the front office over how the Yankees couldn't get Bruce from the Mets. So that's pretty much where you're going to find the most intensity right now between the two clubs is in the front offices, not even in the stands. Forget about on the field. So, Yankees are the team to watch down the stretch, as the Hip has alluded to. All right. So, moving on, Mr. Hip. No, Mr. Hip, I don't know if he's still with us, but I will continue, and then Mr. Hip will join us back in. It might have been a technical difficulty. Anyway, so moving on along. So, the Yankees, again, we will obviously be following it. We will be updating you on future episodes, of course. A few other Major League Baseball notes before we move on to the footballs. Well, first off, we have to mention that Derek Jeter is now the owner of DeMarlins. So after the speculation and the rumors for however long that went on for, Derek Jeter is now officially the owner of the Marlins, him and like 17 other guys, ownership group, that however many guys it was that bought the Marlins. That includes Michael Jordan. And Derek Jeter will be handling the baseball aspects of it. Shock, surprise there, of course. Of course, you have to get a few takes and perspectives on Jeter being an owner, comparing him to Jordan, comparing him to Mario Lemieux, who's owner of the Penguins, and Jordan, owner of the Bobcats, and John Elway, an executive for Denver, and, you know, these superstar athletes, not all of them going to the booth or going to be managers. In this case, Jeter, following the footsteps of Jordan and Lemieux, and he will be a owner of the Marlins. So wish him all the luck there. He will probably come back to Yankee Stadium, you know, once every couple of years to wave his hat for his first All-Timers Day. Maybe he'll show up at spring training or something and, you know, at least give an appearance in a Yankee capacity, as people will probably be upset if he doesn't. I'm sure he's very much aware of that. So other than that, though, he is now a Miami Marlin. So enjoy, that's it. I can honestly care, you know, really could care less.
How about Derek Jeter reunited with Donnie Baseball?
Well, for how long? Until he gets rid of him. No, it's interesting. It is. You know, they were.
I was trying to think. Was it 1 year that the overlap was in 1995?
Playing? Yes.
Yes. And they were actually in the same lineup.
At some point. Yeah. Jeter made his major league debut in 95. Of course, Donnie Baseball was still with the Yankees at that time. I'm sure that they played together a handful of games. And, of course, Donnie Baseball would join the Yankee staff whenever that was under Torrey. It was the bench coach, right? I think it was the bench coach. So after Donnie Zimmer left, and, of course, he would go on to be the manager of the Dodgers after the Yankees passed over Donnie Baseball for Joe Girardi back in 2008. And now reunited, as you have pointed out. But again, for how long? Until Jeter cans Donnie Baseball and says, I'm making my mark on the Marlins. I'm bringing in my own guys. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out down there. A Marlin team that other than the 2 years that they won the World Series have been just perennially just terrible. You know, either mediocre or terrible. So we'll see how the fortunes of that franchise change, or the direction of that franchise turns it all under the leadership of the Jeters. But he'll put his winning reputation to the test and on the line.
It's just amazing that the Marlins could be sold for such a exorbitant price considering their attendance.
It's the ballpark. it's the ballpark. I mean, I'll say mostly the ballpark. The league is, you know, making, you know, still setting records in revenue. I mean, you don't hear as much about baseball as you do the NFL, but they are setting revenue records as well. So, I mean, all the teams, I mean, the values have skyrocketed. All the teams, and really every sport. I mean, the values of these teams have just skyrocketed. So, yeah, the Marlins, you don't think of them as obviously they're not a winning franchise. You know, they don't, you know, draw that well, even with the new stadium. But, yeah, the values of these franchises have just skyrocketed. And there's Jeter with his collection of investors and his guys that they go in all in on to buy the Marlins. And Michael Jordan, as I mentioned, is among I don't know how much money he put up, but one of the guys that he joined in the purchase of the Marlins. So interesting, Jeter.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, well, look, so I'm ready to talk.
You ready to move on to the footballs?
All right. Look.
All right. Next.
So the New York Jets news since our last show is that the Jets are down a player. Well, and that is their number one wide receiver is out for the season.
Only one player?
Quincy.
I think you're down a whole team.
Quincy Enunwa is out for the year with some neck injury. And, I mean, look, no rational Jets fan had high hopes about this team going into the year. But, I mean, do you think average Jet fan, could you just go up to them and ask them if they can name a single healthy receiver on this roster? If they can actually do that?
Actually, who was their second round pick from a couple of years? Was that Devin
Smith? Devin Smith.
Is he still there? Did I get one?
I haven't seen him play.
It's a good question. I mean, honestly, it's a good question. I mean, their skill players are so, I mean, you know, they're running backs. You want to say that they're decent, Slote, Forte, and blah, 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 Powell. But, I mean, their wide receiver group, oh my God. You know, we could talk about the quarterbacks, you know, until you're blue in the face. But, I mean, and, you know, how bad they are and how bad this team's going to be. Who are they throwing the ball to, though? I mean, who are they throwing the ball to? Unless they have Slote catching, 100 balls this year. It's incredible.
Well, if you watch the preseason game with the Tennessee Titans, look, Robbie Anderson had a beautiful play on that on a pass from Josh McCown. Yes, he actually did okay in some limited action last year. The thing is, he's not supposed to be your number one receiver. And you know, after that, it's Jalen Marshall. I don't even know who else is on this. I really don't. I have no clue.
No, who's shot up those fantasy boards? Oh, I wonder who the super sleeper wide receiver for the Jets is going to be. Will it be Robbie Anderson? We watched maybe about like 2 minutes of that Jets Titans game on Saturday night. The leading passer in that game was Alex Tanny. Who the hell is Alex Tanny?
Oh, God.
Tennessee Titans. And Christian Hackenberg, what did he have like a completed, like his long completed pass of the game was what, like 9 yards or something. Maybe the Jets.
All right, so here's this receiving core, by the way, with Onunwa down. Okay.
Yep.
Robbie Anderson, Jalen Marshall. They are 2 second-year undrafted players. They have a second-year seventh rounder, Sherrone Peak, and their two rookies, Adarius Stewart and third rounder, and fourth rounder Chad Hansen.
Ooh, very exciting.
Devin Smith tore his ACL again this offseason.
Oh, that's right.
He's out for the entire year.
That's right. I remember that now. Okay.
Oh my gosh. Wow. And I'm reading an article from August 5th, which was written by Manny Shmeda about how terrible their receiving core is before Onunwa went down.
That's even better. And we'll get into a full preview. We promise all of our listeners we will do a full Jets Giants preview. We're not there yet. We still have some time to go. But I mean, right now the preliminary stuff with the Jets is, well, they go 0-16. Well, they go 0-16. How many games are they really going to win? Blah, blah, blah. Which I think is a little ridiculous to predict that they're going to go winless this year. I mean, look at their schedule. They'll find a way to pull out one of those games, even if it's like 9-6. With Christian Hackenberg, you know, throwing four interceptions and yet still winning the game. But it's pretty bleak right now. If you're a Met and Jet fan, I mean, like, what are you holding on to? Is it just like, I root for the Islanders too? Oh, wait, they stink also. What about the Knicks? Oh, wait, they stink too. All right, maybe come full circle and can't wait till spring training 2018 for the Mets. It's like, what do you have to look forward to? Ugh. It's fantasy football. If you're a fantasy football nerd like we are, then I guess you just focus on that and put your Jets on the back burner until 2000, maybe 2019. You can wake me up for the start of the NFL season.
All right, well, how about the Giants? Did you watch any of the preseason game?
Yeah, a few minutes. And of course, Eli didn't play. No Beckham. You know, I got a glimpse of what's his face? Gino. So, Gino actually looked okay through a bad pick. Josh Johnson.
He looked better than Josh Johnson. Yeah, he looked a lot better than
Josh. What's the point? I mean, what are we talking about here? Well, we were talking about the backup quarterback competition. I mean, my God, he stinks. I mean, you sign Gino. You know, he has talent. He can play a little bit. Just end this and just say goodbye to Josh. Say, hey, Josh, thank you. Moving on. Gino, you're the backup. Spud Webb or whatever, Davis Webb, whatever his name is, will be the third string. And away you go. You hope that Eli.
Joe Webb?
Yeah. What is it? Joe? No, not Joe. Davis, right?
Well, Joe Webb was on the Vikings. He might still be. I thought. I don't know.
Maybe the guy they drafted, the rookie. Drafted. The kid from Cal. So I called him Spud Webb, whatever. Just Davis Webb, whatever his name is. So he'll be the third string. Have Gino be the backup. Ended already. Call today. We can look forward to the beginning of the season when we see their defense in action. And you heard a lot of the good things about their first string. You know, their first team defense on us Friday night against the Steelers. Landon Collins picked up right where he left off. He's going to – I have no reason to think he won't have another monster season. You actually were hearing nothing negative from the Giants, it seemed like. You read the newspapers, and it was like everything was, oh, this guy, look at this guy shooting up. Oh, look how good.
What about their running game, though?
That's the one thing. Perkins – and I saw a little bit. I think you had seen a little bit also. Perkins did not look very good, right?
No.
No burst. Yeah. I mean, I think Perkins will be fine. Whatever your expectations are, I don't think you necessarily have to drop them from what they initially might have been. Do they have great running backs? No. Do they have, do they have a all-pro running back, a Hall of Fame running back in there? No, they don't. But do they need one? I don't think they do. I think their running backs are going to be good enough. A lot of it is based upon their offensive line play, how their running game is going to look this year. And it seems
I don't think they have a guy that's going to, like, who will do well even if there's not much help from the offensive line. Like, the offensive line has to create gaps for this running game to work. They don't have, there's nobody making Barry Sanders types moves to get something out of nothing.
Well, I mean, the question is, when you need to rely on your running game at the end of the game, you know, if you have a lead and you're holding on to like a one score lead and you have the ball, you know, and there's 5 minutes to go in the game, can your running game get the job done to try and get a couple first downs, get some time off the clock, you know, and either run out the clock or if you can at least get a couple first downs before you have to give the ball back? Or, I mean, can the running game work efficiently in that mode? And they did not do a good job really last year. I mean, they don't. you know, Jennings was a guy that actually was, that was probably his specialty. That's where he was at his best, you know, getting the tough yards at the end of the game. Yep. When he, you know, kind of softened up that physical brand of running that he brought. You know, Perkins is not exactly a physical runner. I mean, Orleans Dark was a, you know, more of a downhill physical runner than Perkins. Maybe they'll have another, work another guy in there. But, I mean, that's the question for me with the Giants running game. It's not going to be the focal point of their offense. As we know, they have a zillion guys to pass the ball to, and that's the McAdoo offense. So,
Where's Andre Williams these days?
I don't even know. I'm sure he's out of the league. If he's on a practice already? Squad, I don't – I'd be shocked.
If he's on the looks like he's on the Chargers. He's on the Los Angeles Chargers.
I'd be shocked if he's on their 53-man roster when camp breaks. He'll probably end up being a practice squad player if he wants to do that for a.
This is what happened. 24 years old, and this is what happens to players. Like, what does he have going for him now?
And he ran for how many yards in college? I mean, it was. I mean, God. For Boston, what was it? Boston College you went to, right? And he ran.
This is only his third season coming up already. That's it.
No, he was on the Giants for at least 2 years. He wasn't there last year. It's got to be at least his fourth year.
Right, so maybe it's his fourth year, but still, 24 years old.
Yeah,
that's it. But I mean, he turns 20. He turns 25 in 2 weeks. Yeah. But still.
I mean, but everything else that you've been hearing from the Giants camp had, for the most part, you know, been positive. How this guy looks good, and you know, the defensive tackle battle, Bromley, and you know, the rookie that they just drafted, Tomlinson, and you know, how good Vernon looks, and how he's in great shape. And
I'm worried about the running game. There's a lot of teams with running back tandems that, you know, like the 1-2 punch is really more now the common thing to see rather than an aberration. You know, there's very few cowbells in the league anymore. That's just the way that the league is evolving. But the teams with a lot of 1-2 punches have good 1-2 punches or have a lot of potential. We don't, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't, eh. I'm worried. Like, look, Dallas is now not going to have a formidable downhill, formidable.
Come on, 1-2 punch of Darren McFadden and
Alfred Morris.
Come on, 1-2 punch. Ezekiel Elliott. Pff. Ezekiel Elliott, who is what I say? Alfred Morris and Darren McFadden and his calves that you can literally wrap your whole hand around and maybe even break if you like breathe on it. I'm not worried about the Giants running game just yet. I want to see an action. We'll see how they look the first couple weeks of the year. If they look like they can't run to save their lives and the offensive line is not opening up holes, then we can start, you know, talking about it and maybe worrying. Until then, I'll, you know, wait and see how it plays out. I mean, I think Perkins is going to be okay. I think he showed last year that he has ability, and I think he can do the job. He's not going to touch the ball.
Can Shane Vereen stay healthy for 8 games?
Yeah, and Vereen, and then you have him too in the passing.
Can he stay healthy for 8 games? I mean, the guy can stay on the field last year.
No, he didn't. Well, he got... He got what was it? A triceps that he?
Yeah, twice. I think he re-injured it. Yep. Yeah, so, triceps injury.
And look, they don't have a stud running back. They don't even have a guy that was. They don't have a high draft pick. They don't have a, you know, a guy that's been established like a Slotay in this. I mean, they don't have that guy. But they may not need that guy if they can if they can improve upon their passing game from last year, which, you know, I mean, their offense for most of the year last year was very, very pedestrian and at times really bad. And I think they're going to definitely be better this year. I think they acknowledge that they were too predictable last year. They have extra weapons now. You know, we'll get into the whole preview, but everything that you've heard from camp so far, for the most part, has been good. You know, take what you will out of the preseason game. I don't really take much out of it. You know, as long as
you take much out of Ben McAdoo's new look this year.
Oh yes, the slick back hair. Yeah. He looks like Gordon Gekko.
He's got to use like 4 combs to get it look right.
Well, how much hair gel does he go through? Does he think he goes to like a whole tube in one sitting?
I'm sure he'd love the opportunity for you to do his hair for him one morning. Yeah.
Probably has like a whole army of guys. Maybe he has the whole team, or maybe they all take turns. All right, Odell, it's your turn today. Eli, you're up.
All right, next. Look, so big news dropped last week. We've been waiting for this for what, a year now? The suspension of Ezekiel Elliott, now a second year player in the league, led the league in rushing last year. Yes, didn't he?
Yes,
I believe he did. And now he's missing the first 6 weeks of the game. Dallas has a bye week 7, I believe. So you're not going to see Ezekiel Elliott until week 8 of the NFL season, unless the appeal stands in the way. So we'll see how that plays out. But it's for his alleged domestic, I say alleged domestic abuse, because he was not convicted or charged, or he didn't plea to anything in a court of law. But it's for a violation of the league's personal conduct policy. Is that the correct lingo? I probably have seen it too many times before.
Yeah, personal conduct policy. And I mean, there's a domestic violence. It's, I think, like the broad part of the collective bargaining agreement is the personal conduct policy, and then they have specific for like domestic violence.
Do the Giants play the Cowboys in the first, within the first 6 weeks? Do they play week one?
Week one.
So there you go. All right. Well, but will the appeal be heard by week one?
Yeah, I think it has to be. Well, I mean, if they agree to it, if they agree to the appeal, which they probably will. So if it does get heard, if they do agree to hear it, it gets cut down the 4 games, which I have some thoughts on if it does, but he's been talked that he can obviously do what Brady did and, you know, file suit if the appeal gets rejected, or if they don't come to any kind of agreement, and he can then file suit and drag it through the courts, exactly what Brady did with the Deflategate.
Yep.
And then, you know, they can get, you know, a stay on the ruling by the NFL if a court puts an injunction, or right. I guess that would be what they would do. They would put forth an injunction on the ruling, and then he can then play from day one and until the hearing, you know, the case gets heard, then he'll be on the field. And which I'm not going to speculate on. I'm not going to try and guess or speculate or predict as to what's going to happen there. We'll just let it unfold as it does. But 6 games, as you mentioned. So I don't know what your take was initially, but I mean, we knew that this was coming. Jerry Jones can say whatever the hell he wants, and he should honestly just keep his stupid trap shut, especially when you hear about how he hasn't given any statement. I haven't seen a thing from him in terms of like official statements or comments. You just heard that he was furious. How dare the NFL do this to me? I'm Jerry Jones. I did see an article from Gary Myers, which was he's a NFL columnist for Daily News. I usually like Gary Myers. This was the most ridiculous concept I've ever seen. He said that Goodell, he basically intimated that Goodell was wrong because he created a new enemy now with Jerry Jones. Not that Jerry Jones has not been a perennial enemy of the NFL going back to, you know, really when he purchased the Cowboys. But that is the perspective that he felt that he had to offer, was that the NFL now created a new enemy with Jerry Jones because they had the gall to suspend one of his players, his star running back. You know, all he did was commit a violent, vicious, heinous crime against a woman. But, you know, how dare you, NFL, suspend Jerry Jones's star running back. That was essentially the perspective that Gary Myers had. And he wasn't necessarily condemning the suspension. He just felt he had to give that perspective, like, oh, look what happened now. Another enemy for Roger Goodell in the NFL. So I have a few more thoughts. I don't know if you have. If you have, go ahead. I have a few more after that, and then we can move on from
the lip in his courtesy allow with. Letting the hip chime in here, dying to get him off your chest. So fire away now, Jimothy.
All right. Well, I'm not gonna yell, scream, or rant or anything. I mean, here's my take. So we knew that this had been going on forever. I did yell about the fact that it seemed like the NFL was trying to sweep this under the rug, because this happened in July of last year, before training camp of last year even commenced. So You barely heard a word about it. It just seemed like the NFL was doing their typical damage control, protect the brand, protect the shield. Oh, no, our star, you know, our rookie star running back is being accused of this. We can't let this get out. We don't want any outrage or backlash, and we're just going to try and let it go away, sweep it under the rug. Maybe we'll come out with a statement in a few months saying, oh, we didn't find anything. He's cool. You know, everybody forgot about it. Good. Kaepernick, everybody's angry about him. Perfect. Great. Moving on. And that didn't happen. 13 months was absurd. That's ridiculous. There was no way that this needed to take 13 months. But it seemed as if, and I, you know, I read a few things, it seemed like the NFL actually did their due diligence here. They hired a few outside, you know, they did their own investigation, but then they brought in a few outside and independent non-NFL people to, you know, bring it, you know, to review the case, to review the cases made by both the NFL and Elliott's people too. And, you know, they gave recommendations, and the NFL, after getting all the information and doing their due diligence, it seemed like, for this 13 months, decided that they had enough evidence that he did commit these violent, vicious acts against this girl, and that he was absolutely worthy of a 6-game suspension, which is their baseline for violating this portion of the personal conduct policy. Now, what you've seen over the last couple of days is people essentially saying, I don't know if he did, I don't know if he didn't, but I look at this that the NFL has no credibility here. They've been when you go back to Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson through Greg Hardy and all that, they have had, and Josh Brown last year with the Giants, they have had no credibility because they have no credibility because they have been inconsistent. They've been hypocritical. They have done so many things wrong and so many things that have been obvious that have been to solely protect themselves and protect the brand and protect their revenue streams and all that at the expense of letting these players that commit these violent, vicious acts of violence continue to play unabated and not handle their discipline right and handle these situations well at all. So people have basically taken the perspective that I don't know if he did or he didn't. I haven't seen the evidence. I was not there. I haven't seen the evidence. I don't know what they looked at. It seems like he probably did do it because they documented everything that they had, pictures and text messages and whatever other evidence that they accumulated over this time. But they don't want to come out and say, "Bravo, NFL, great job! You did a great job. You did a fantastic job here." But they don't want to come out and say, "NFL, you screwed up again. It's because you're the NFL, because it's Roger Goodell. This was completely screwed up again. It's hypocritical and it's inconsistent and blah blah blah." Because they don't want to try and, you know, shift the focus away from the fact that Ezekiel Elliott most likely did commit these violent, vicious, criminal acts that he got away with because of the fact that the Columbus, you know, county, whatever, prosecutor's office decided that they couldn't win the case. So they were just going to let this girl, you know, hang out to dry, not give her justice, and let the superstar athlete walk. Oh, that, we haven't seen that before. So, and that, of course, that was part of the argument put forth by Elliott and his people. So you basically have seen that kind of take, not completely bravo, NFL, good job, NFL. Or,
you know what?
The Elliott should go away, but kind of.
You got to read
morally ambivalent. I'm sorry.
But you got to read between the lines. So, you know, even with like the Charlottesville stuff, we're not going to get into it, but when you hear the president speak about that,
talk about.
They don't have to say bravo. They don't have to say bravo, NFL, to implicitly agree. When the reality is, if you go back to whoever, I don't know if you're referring to any specific people that, you know, in the media that, you know, were morally ambivalent or whatever. But if you go back to the mask, are you going to still watch on Sunday, despite, you know, your maybe not in full agreement of what the NFL's decided here? What do you think that person's answer is going to be?
Well, it comes back to, I understand, it comes back to that. Yes, absolutely. And again, the Dallas Cowboy fans, I can say with 99% certainty, the second that Ezekiel Elliott takes the field in Dallas, he will get a rousing, exactly. And we know that there is, maybe you'll have a couple of people booing, maybe you'll have like 3 or 4 people in that stadium booing. Everybody else standing, rousing ovation when he takes the field.
So we have to bookmark this. We have to bookmark this for that moment when it comes, when it actually happens.
Because it'll be, it'll all get an obscene amount of coverage the second that he does come back and, oh, Elliott's back after the 6th row, however many games ends up being. But we know that when he does come back, that's exactly what's going to happen. And, you know, maybe if he's on the road, depending on, you know, maybe then he'll get booed by some people. But once he steps on the field at Dallas Stadium or Jerry's Dome, Jerry's World, he will get a rousing standing ovation, just like the Met fans gave Jose Reyes when he returned last year. So, yes, and you're right. And people, and his ties into Kaepernick and what we were going to get to there. And I'm actually glad you mentioned Charlottesville. We're not going to get into the details with that. But it's interesting now that you have you've had, and I talked about the outrage that people have expressed for a guy putting his knee on the ground like Kaepernick has, and you know, with his demonstrations last year. And again, what you want to question his motives, his intent, his sincerity, and all that. That's fine. You want to disagree with his methods, and what, that's fine. But what's amazing now is you have two guys in Bennett and Michael Bennett and Marshawn Lynch that did the same exact thing. Sitting during the national anthem, and we've seen other players do it too. Now, Kaepernick is still blackballed by the NFL and the cowardly NFL owners because they're so worried about the outcry or the backlash from all these outraged people that they would dare sign Colin Kaepernick for his heinous act of putting his knee on the ground. That now you have other players doing this, but because they are going to, and Michael Bennett basically came out and said, I'm doing this because of what happened, not events that happened involving police in Missouri or in Minnesota or South Carolina a few years ago. I'm putting my ass on the ground or on the bench because of what happened in Charlottesville. And because of how, you know, appalling what we saw, the images that we saw in Charlottesville, who is going to come out now and condemn them for doing that? So that kind of ties in now to what you have with Elliott and the reaction that he gets, and the fact that you have people outraged at the NFL still, as opposed to being outraged at the fact that Elliott's going to be able to play. And now you have Kaepernick, who's still blackballed by the league and by the owners, as he still doesn't have a team. And then you have Bennett and Lynch sitting and again, Bennett basically saying, I'm doing this because of Charlottesville. So, but because of what we just saw, people are going to have a lot more difficulty now expressing outrage over that, because if you do, you're going to look like the jerk, not Bennett. So, I mean, you know, this is all just, you know, we're getting, you know, very much digressing away from the sports aspect of it. And I understand not trying to, you know, evolve into a whole sociology discussion here, but it's just interesting because it all does tie in. And
it does. It does. Look, I think at the end, before the season's over, I think Kaepernick will get signed. And it's and call it, if you want to call it sad, unfortunate, if this is why, the reason. But I think there's going to be a few quarterbacks that go down to injury, and a team's just going to be desperate enough and decide to take the plunge, if you will. Unfortunately, is the way to have to.
Well, just think about that statement. I mean, plunge in the what? You know, a guy that
you could come up with a long list of players that Kaepernick is better than of quarterbacks on NFL rosters currently.
I mean, look at the Jets quarterbacks.
But you know what? What's the owner's perspective is, I'd rather have a guy that's a little worse, or maybe a lot more worse, than a guy that's going to unfortunately bring unwanted attention to this organization. That's their line of thinking. They hate it, and we all know that's the reason. I mean,
absolutely. It's, they can make up whatever.
That's transparent. The owners know that we know that. I mean, they're not idiots.
It's insulting to say that. That's what's the insulting part. Oh, it's for football reasons. Really? Well, really? You're gonna feed us that nonsense? Really? Oh my God!
I think somebody, look, we already saw Tannehill go down for the year, so Cutler got signed. Okay, hey, it's gonna quarterbacks get signed off the street throughout the year, every year, and I think it's gonna happen where a team's gonna be desperate enough. If that's what it takes, it's unfortunate, but that's the reality, and so they may not be doing it. At that point, are they going to get the backlash because the team or the fan base will understand why they did it, because they need a quarterback that badly? And how sad is that rhetoric?
Yeah, well, yeah, like if their team is like, maybe it's like a few games into the season, the team has high expectations, and your starting quarterback goes down. I mean, let's say you want to throw a team out. Let's say Carson Palmer goes down in Arizona, and I don't know who Arizona's backup is. I'm sure it's nobody good. So Carson Palmer's down. Arizona says, hey, we have expectations for this year. We need a guy that can play. Hey, Colin Kaepernick. And then they say to the Arizona fans, hey, Colin Kaepernick can play. And the Arizona fans say,
I mean, team like Arizona – right, a team like Arizona wouldn't want to sign a guy like Kaepernick because Carson Palmer's a starter. It's like there's no intention to use him during the year, and they'll just sign him off the street.
I'm just saying, if he gets Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but a team with a shitty quarterback situation, they're obviously they should have more incentive to want to sign, but clearly they're not willing to do it either. Like, Baltimore was rumored to want to sign him because Joe Flacco has a lingering back injury or something, and now Andrew Luck may not be ready to start the year. But if Luck was deemed to be out for the season, I think they would, you know, Jim Irsay is a pretty polarizing owner, so I don't know exactly where he stands on the issue. He has his own, like,
yeah, he's a little out there. He's a little, yeah, he might not care. He might say, you know what? You want to be outraged? Be outraged. I don't care. I want to win. I need a guy that can play the position. Colin Kaepernick's there. I'm bringing him in. And I would applaud the first owner that does it. I would.
Yeah.
And, you know, the hell with – but, again, it's changed now. The environment has changed because now you're going to have guys doing it, not protesting police. You know, what Kaepernick was originally protesting, now they're protesting what we just saw a few days ago in Virginia. And nobody – is going to come out and say, oh, how dare you do that? How dare you do that for protesting something like that? People are going to be a lot more hesitant now to express outrage for something like that. And I think the entire environment now surrounding the sitting and putting your knee on the ground for the national anthem has changed dramatically. So it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds.
Well, you know, part of it is it's taken time to settle in, like a lot of things that are perceived as outlandish by some. You know, how long ago was it that Kaepernick originally did that? Now,
yeah, it goes back to a year ago. It was a preseason last year that he did it, right? Well, I don't even think it was the first regular season game. I think it was preseason.
So now guys are doing it on their own accord, and it's not perceived as, when I say their own accord, I mean like they're not just following Kaepernick directly. They're kind of doing it for a different reason and different cause, if you will. And
well, they can say it's for whatever they want. I mean,
and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what they can say. At this point, they can say it's for whatever. Yeah, well, and in a way, even if Kaepernick never gets signed, in a way, he's probably accomplished more than he ever hoped to.
He's almost like a martyr for the cause. If he doesn't play, he's essentially a martyr for the cause. And
a sacrificial lamb, you know, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, he probably goes to bed at night more than gratified that he's at least made that much of a
maybe
of an impact.
Yeah, it's possible. I don't know if he's.
I mean, look,
furious.
He should have known. He should have known this was a risk that was possible. You know that he wouldn't. The team wouldn't want him for at some point. But
I mean, and keep in mind also, Kaepernick did not yell. Sorry, go ahead. I thought he lost for a second.
I mean, no, I was just saying, the season hasn't even started yet, so he may not even have lost out on anything yet.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know what's going through his head, if he's fuming over this or, you know, angry, or if he's just like indifferent. Like, yeah, you know what? I want to play. When somebody decides that they want to bring me in and potentially sign me, I'll gladly go. And whoever wants to eventually ultimately wants to sign me, I'll go there and play football and leave it at that. Maybe that's his outlook. If it is, you know, I applaud him for understanding the situation. And yeah, I mean, he's definitely has started something with that. And, you know, athletes speaking out in general. And again, obviously after what happened, what transpired, which is going to started a whole new discourse now in our country, as we've seen, you know, with the news cycle over the last 48 hours now. So, you know, athletes chime in, whether it's football players or other, you know, LeBron James or whoever. So, again, very different environment now. So we'll, yeah. I mean, I think we will see Colin Kaepernick on a football field, at least on a sideline at some point this year. My prediction.
Yes.
All right.
Yep. All right. Well, Hipster Roman of Zenith, fire away.
Yeah. So I actually going on right now. I saw this a little while ago. So. Fantasy football. Yay. We will do fantasy football stuff for all of our listeners, as I'm sure they're aching for our insights. Oh, what did Hip and Lip have to say about Robbie Anderson? Oh, we just gave you about him. But what about Matthew Stafford or Carlos Hyde? Yes, we're on the list. Well, Matthew Barry, which any fantasy nerd or geek is, I'm sure, very familiar with. He is an ESPN guy, a fantasy football guy. He is currently in hour four of a 28-hour, that's right, you heard me, 28-hour marathon of a fantasy football preview show, of which clips. So it's not airing 28 hours straight on ESPN Network or Maybe it's online, but they will be airing clips of this 28-hour marathon of this fantasy football preview show on 8 different ESPN shows during the 28 hours. So Sports Center and Between the Line and Mike and Mike and however many ESPN shows, they'll be airing parts of this marathon. So Barry actually said, give me only 30 minutes a day and you will be a smarter fantasy player. So I guess that means that out of the 1,680 minutes that he will be providing this expert fantasy football information, you know, Aaron Rodgers good, Ryan Mallett bad, you will only need to watch 60 of those minutes, you know, because it spans across the 2 days, the marathon. So 60 minutes, pick the 60 minutes of the 28 hours and you're golden. But amazing. Like, what could you be talking about for 28 hours straight? We're not even like, we're a few days away. We still have another like 3 weeks, 28 hours. What are you talking about? Amazing.
Wait, so he's doing all 28 hours straight?
Straight.
He's not going to sleep?
No. 28 hours straight. 7 o'clock tonight he started. He doesn't end until, what would 28 hours be? 11 o'clock at night tomorrow night, right? So 11 o'clock at night tomorrow. Yeah. Yes, 28 hours straight. He's not stopping. He's talking about fantasy football.
Oh my God.
He started at 7 o'clock tonight. He will not end. He will not go off the air until 11 o'clock tomorrow night.
I mean, look, fantasy football, it's the most popular fantasy sport. People love it.
I know.
It doesn't surprise me that they're going to these extremes to get people to watch. I mean, look, ESPN is probably struggling with people turning it on the television to watch SportsCenter and these talk shows. It's just the content's consumed on the internet nowadays, and so there is this a sign of desperate times for ESPN?
if that's what this is, if this is like, oh man, what do we need to get people to tune into ESPN, what can we do? Oh, I know, everybody loves fantasy football. We'll give them 28 hours of fantasy football preview and analysis 3 weeks before the season even starts. It's actually even more than that.
That's insane.
I mean, it's
3 weeks. 3 weeks from this Thursday.
Okay.
Starts.
So, I mean, it is incredible. I give the guy credit. If you know that he's going to be doing this 28 hours straight, and then he starts his like regular show. You know, just like his fantasy football daily or whatever. He does it at 5 o'clock every day on one of the ESPN channels. He starts it the next day. So he'll go home, go to sleep for a few hours and come back and be bright eyed, bushy tailed for his first show of fantasy football daily, whatever it is, the next day on ESPN or one of the channels. So,
wow.
Yeah.
All right.
I guess if I watch all 28 hours of it, then I better win the damn league.
Oh my God!
I'll scare everybody out of their pants by saying I watched all 28 of Matthew Barry's fantasy football show. Just conceitedly to me now, super 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 sleepers. I got them all.
You got all the Sammy Watkins ready. Yes, to go.
Third string running back on the 49ers. God. Maybe I'll actually know more than two jet receivers by then as well.
He's going to be the Brandon Oliver of 2015. Yes.
Brandon Oliver out of Buffalo. Brandon Oliver out of Buffalo. A flash in the pan for a couple of weeks. Fantasy darling for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, what team is he on now?
Is he even still on a team? I don't know. Who's San Diego's running? Melvin Gordon. I guess he's okay.
He is on the Chargers as well. So he's Andre Williams' teammate.
Oh, is he really? Oh, he's still there. Okay. Well, even though they have the amazing Danny Woodhead, the ageless wonder, former Jet Danny Woodhead. Yes. All right.
Do they?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
They don't have Woodhead anymore? Where's Woodhead now? Oh, my God.
He's on Baltimore. Oh. Get your act together.
Wow.
Terrence West, Danny Woodhead, 1-2 tandem in Baltimore.
What happened to Kenny? Isn't Kenny Dixon injured again?
Yeah, he got injured. Yeah.
See, this is why I have to watch it. I have to watch Matthew Barry.
Case in point. The HMOZ just turned into a promotion.
It was very much enlightening for the lip as he realized that he needs to watch at least a few of those 28 hours if he has any expectations of winning his fantasy league this year. Yes.
Wow.
All right, next. All right. So, well, HMOZ, Hipster Moment of Zenith. There you go. And, of course, that will take us to our final segment of the week. Everybody's favorite, yours and mine. And that would be the Hipster Beer of the Week. And that would be your cue. Take it away, Mr. Hip.
Yeah, so last Tuesday, I went to the Mets, New York Mets versus Texas Rangers game. This is a Tuesday night at Citi Field. Okay.
Got a Bud Light there? Oh, okay.
Chris Flexen starting for the New York Mets against the original starter, I think was Andrew Cashner. He got scratched. So I forgot who even started in place of Cashner. They had to call somebody up. It was a last minute thing. So just a completely W gas pitching matchup against two teams that are pretty much at the Rangers just traded away Darvish. I mean, Beltre had his 3,000th hit. Whoop-de-doo. A week or so before that, but I mean, just a matchup completely, you know, who's coming to the ballpark? To my surprise, waiting outside of the stadium to get in, I had to wait online about 15 minutes just to get to the security checkpoint.
What?
The lines were really long. They were about 50 people deep. It was incredible.
Even though there were 50 people total in the ballpark that night?
there was a big crowd at this game. It's a Tuesday night. Okay. I could not believe my eyes because I remember being at Citi Field a year prior, and it was dead. And here we are with a team with nothing to play for, and the stadium was – I'm not going to say every seat was filled, but there were a lot of people there. I couldn't believe it.
Okay.
Citi Field is known for having craft beer. They have Long Island City Beer Project. They have, I don't know. They have.
Do they really? They have LIC?
Yeah, they do. Wow. They have McKellar. So the Hipster Beer of the Week, though, is McKellar Brewing.
All right.
The brewery is based, I believe, in San Diego, somewhere in California. I believe San Diego. So the name of the beer is called Henry Hops. And I mention it because it actually was made specifically for Citi Field exclusively to start this season. Wow. So it's they made two exclusive beers for Citi Field, McKellar. Sally something is the name of the other one. It's a Pilsner. Henry Hops, as you might guess, is an IPA. Bright aromatics boasting orange blossom honey, pine needles, and ripe mango.
Ooh.
Wonderfully balanced biscuit and...
Are they have biscuits? I see.
Decent. It's not amazing, but you could tell they have a couple of craft beer stands or a few peppered throughout. Now, I'm not talking about behind center field, but they're like little craft stands where they have all the cans lined up. And you could really tell they're trying to have a good selection. And so I enjoyed it. I just had it out of the can. It was a tall boy. It was enjoyable. And so there's your Hipster Beer of the Week. Yes, all right.
Quite the experience. McKellar at Citi Field, yes. All right.
Yeah, all right. So next. Look, more football to come as we get. We'll be more like 2 weeks from opening kickoff. So we'll get some fantasy discussion going, just give away all of our favorite players. And since pretty much the only listeners we have are people that play against us in our fantasy leagues, what a perfect way to share the wealth than just give away our thoughts, because it makes it that much more challenging and exciting when you're willing to, you know,
share your
say the players that you like or don't like. And yeah, of course. I mean, and then just win anyway. So.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Yes. Two championships for me and three. Yes, five championships between the two of us. So yes, for those that are in our league, and you're going to want to listen to what we have to say since we are five-time champions.
All right. Well. All right.
Yes, rivalry week. Enjoy the rest of it, folks, and we will see you next week.